Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So you're hearing my voice, but have you ever stopped to wonder how your radio works? My next guest says, we would do well to learn the inner workings of everyday objects like the radio, telephone, or any other feats of engineering that we take for granted. In fact, he says it might help us become a less disposable society if we knew how these things worked. Andrew Burrows is an engineer, design consultant, and author of a really cool little new book called Everyday Engineering. Chronicle Books is the publisher, and we have linked to some pages on our website. You can go to WNYC.org, and we link to a little slideshow that that they put together, and you'll see how visual this book is, as well as the information that it has. So hello, Andrew. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
What most marvels you before we get into any of the particular pieces of things here that you write about or photograph, from fire hydrants to Tyvek to the bicycle chain that we were just talking about before? What most marvels you about the engineering found in everyday objects in general?
I think I just love the fact that if you look at everyday objects, there's an awful lot going on. There's been many years of development that's taken place to evolve machines and equipment to where they are now. And these days, I think we just take it for granted. And so what I love to think about is actually that it really is a marvelous thing we've done for ourselves as a human race to kind of get ourselves to the place where we can achieve an awful lot of stuff.
Think we take it all too much for granted?
I do. I really do. I think we've lost touch with the vocabulary of how things work as you look around the world.
So, callers, we're going to open up the phones for you to chime in with your favorite piece of everyday engineering or question for our guest, Andrew Burrows, author of Everyday Engineering. Want to just pick something from your book and talk about it?
Yeah, sure. Let me give you the example of, actually, it's my own car. There's a picture in the book of the windscreen. And if it's raining, most of you will notice that on a windscreen, the wipers don't quite get all the rain off the windscreen for you. And there's a little triangle on almost every car. Perhaps if you own a Mercedes, maybe not, but every other car has a little triangle. It doesn't quite get cleaned up. And that's a problem that's been around for about 100 years. And no one, despite, I'm sure, a lot of hard work and thinking, has really been able to crack that problem effectively and solve it in a way that is acceptable from a sort of manufacturing point of view, reliability, and a cost point of view. So that, to me, is a fascinating little example of something that ought to be easy to solve, but apparently is not.
Interesting. Are you British, by the way?
I am British, yes.
Yes, because probably people realized or noticed that you said windscreen, which in America is something you put over a microphone.
Okay.
We say the windshield.
Windshield.
Over here. Just mentioning that in case people didn't quite know what he was talking about, though the wipers probably gave it away. And you have that great little picture. I think this is actually the centerfold of the book, right? The picture of the windscreen or windshield with a little triangle of water sitting right there in the middle.
Yeah, and I think if you look at that, most of us look right through that and right past it. And so it's very interesting to stand in front of something that you see every day and then suddenly notice it when you've been missing it for all that time.
So that's actually a failure of engineering.
It is. It's a failure, yes. I mean, it's a problem that really has no good solution, I don't believe, beyond adding a lot of complexity and cost, which for most vehicles is not acceptable.
So, or hiring a panhandler to stand outside your window and, squeegee person.
That would be one way to do it.
To always travel with you.
You could imagine a very small wiper blade that could be designed just to clear that out there, but I think that would be too expensive and not really a viable solution.
Now, that's from the chapter of your book called Challenges. Some of the other chapter titles, and I love the table of contents page, colorful and interestingly designed, creation, craftsmanship, unseen, illusions, interfaces, elegance, function follows form, sequences, and then challenges. And then part two is called degradation, corners, ugliness, materials, repetition, consequences, nature, time. Give me an example of something from the unseen chapter of your book.
Okay. Let me tell you about a time I took my kids to the fairground last year, and you know, the fairground is a wonderful, exciting, noisy, lively place, and you sort of get absorbed by that, the lights and the flashiness of it, and the rides and everything else. But if you look just a step behind the surface of the fairground, there's an awful lot of infrastructure going into supporting all of those machines and equipment. And I think we tend to focus, of course, because we're meant to, on the light side of things, the enjoyment side of it, the entertainment, but very close to us, maybe some 6 inches away sometimes, you'll find people and machines that are there to kind of support that whole experience. But we don't notice it when we're enjoying ourselves.
So listeners, again, what objects have you admired and always been curious about? Maybe the placement of your doorknobs, the shape of a paper clip, maybe the keyboard on your telephone. Now's your chance to call and inquire about their design backstories. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Bob in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Hi, good morning. Good morning. Thanks for your good work.
Thank you.
The thing that always amazes me, and we take it for granted all the time, is the elevator. It's a form of public transportation that's the cost is covered. It moves you someplace. It does a wonderful thing. It's almost magical the way it does it. And no one charges you for it.
Well, you get charged one way or another somewhere along the line, since I think everything gets externalized.
Well, yeah, somebody pays for it.
But, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, the elevator is a remarkable thing, and it's what enabled us to build skyscrapers, because without elevators, I should say, we wouldn't be going up 25, 30, 50 floors in a building. So it's a piece of technology that's enabled us to achieve a goal of building upwards. It's also a piece of technology that I don't think I've ever heard of an instance where an elevator has failed. Maybe they have failed.
Oh, yeah, they have. From time, I mean, it's a horrible tragedy.
Yes, we don't want to talk about
awful
that.
Awful stories. But,
they are remarkably reliable.
Remarkably reliable. We take it for granted that we can get in an elevator safely.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there were just a few high-profile elevator crashes, then people would probably stop doing it.
Yeah. And so that's an experience. So you step into a box that's usually got, you know, lights, and sometimes it has music in, and wood paneling. And what you're not seeing as you ride up and down in that thing is the engineering and the complexity and the cables and the motors that are making it go up and down. But that is something. It's a good example of something we take for granted.
By the way, I mentioned what you can see on our website. Let me be a little bit more specific about that. We have two things that you can see related to this book. You can go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and then click on Everyday Engineering there for a video about the book. And we have our Brian Lehrer Show scrapbook, which has some photos of Everyday Engineering. And my guest is Andrew Burrows, author of the book Everyday Engineering. You know, with the Minnesota bridge collapse, there's been an overwhelming concern about crumbling infrastructure. How do you feel about our nation's infrastructure?
I think it is in a pretty bad way, and I think it reflects, unfortunately, not in a very good way on the profession of engineering. If I think back to what I would call the golden age of engineering, the Industrial Revolution, where engineers were the heroes of the age and were really lauded for allowing us to achieve some tremendous new things, and then we fast forward to where we are today, where that same infrastructure in many cases is kind of falling around behind us. We're seen as the villains almost, which I think is a really sad thing. I don't think it retells the full picture, because a lot of engineers do spend a lot of time and energy trying to maintain those structures.
And we were just talking in our last segment about the Ring of Steel, which you might think from hearing the title is a series of rails or bridges or some such thing, but it's all these little video cameras.
Right, right. There's an example of technology working, again, sort of behind the scenes. People don't see those things very. I've been to, you know, spent a lot of time in London, and you really don't notice the cameras. They're going, they're doing their work behind the scenes almost. But it does enable us to, come up with a society that is a little bit safer, I hope.
Joseph in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What are you thinking about?
When you go into places like the Home Depot or Lowe's or department stores, there are toilets that flush with no manual activation. It's like there's a sensor. And I see no evidence of electricity. What makes it flush when you leave?
You know, it's a great question.
Yeah, we see where Joseph said is.
Yeah. It's a great question. I actually don't know the answer to that question, but I do know that the toilet flushing mechanisms around the world are remarkably different places you go. And so that's a place where what it makes me think about as an engineer is the translation of technology from one place to the next. It's almost as if technologies evolve in one location, but they don't move very effectively around the world. And so in England, the toilets are really terrible. I mean, it's really hard to flush the toilet in England, I have to tell you. You go to Germany or even in the U.S., it's a relatively easy thing to accomplish.
Actually, I want to know why those sensors don't work when you're done so much of the time, or why they work when you're right in the middle. But I think that's another show.
Yeah.
Amy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I used to work for the American National Standards Institute, and one of the standards I edited was on elevators and on elevator safety. And it made me a lot less worried about elevators because they are fail-safe half a dozen different ways.
Yeah, they certainly are. And I think before the first one was built, I'm quite sure there was an awful lot of work. I mean, Mr. Otis, I think, was the man who was the first successful person to build one of those. I think the technology that enabled them to be successful was really that fail-safe technology. And being able to demonstrate that in a public way so that people could see for their own eyes that, in fact, if you cut the cables, this thing is going to stop without falling.
You know, we had a caller on September 11th who was actually concerned about the conflict between design and engineering. Do you think there is such a point of contention frequently?
Well, if you choose to make it one, you certainly can. There's
and of course that was in relation to the buildings, to the towers.
Yes. Design and engineering do bump up sometimes, but I think the way I like to think of this is that the best results, the best designs can be achieved when design and engineering work hand in hand towards a common goal. So it's easy to pit one against the other if you're not careful, but I think the nicest and the best, most effective examples are ones where the problem is clearly understood and engineering and designers are working at the same time on the same side of the table to solve a problem.
Are you an engineer?
I am an engineer.
Do you think that engineers think differently from designers?
I think they do. They do have a slightly more analytical approach to problem solving. But good engineers are capable of doing two things. They can dive into a problem, and if necessary, they can bring out their calculator and get the equations going. But at the same time, good engineers, I think, need to be good communicators and need to be able to connect very effectively with people from all other walks of life and disciplines so that they can clearly understand the problem that they should be solving. I believe a lot of bad design, if you want to call it that, arises from people solving the wrong problem. So when I like to tackle new problems, I like to sit back and really think about the problem in the widest possible terms before we dive in and get too deep.
By the way, somebody emails, you might be interested to know that the automobile windshield wiper was invented by the legendary pianist Joseph Hoffman. Today's wipers are basically the very same mechanism. Do you know that to be true?
I don't, but I trust him because I'm sure he's done his research. But there's a great example of cross-fertilization of technology and ideas. You know, a pianist coming up with a wiper blade. I mean, a wonderful story.
Wet keys certainly will not do. James in Mount Vernon, you're on WNYC. Hi, James.
Hi. I had the privilege once of witnessing a NASA launch of the shuttle when they were sending up the Hubble. And it made me think and do a lot of research on the space program. And it always amazed me that we've been able to put human beings to stroll around on the moon, and yet we haven't been able to create a stocking for women that doesn't run. Is this a failure of engineering or of the women's movement?
well, that's a great two great, very different examples of technology at work there. I think I would classify the stocking that doesn't run as one of those challenges that's quite difficult to achieve when you're trying to create something that enhances the beauty of a woman's leg, at the same time is comfortable to wear and lightweight. Those things are quite difficult to achieve. Now, you're right. Here's where I think that this lands. If you're sending a shuttle to the moon, you can go to any lengths to achieve that goal. You can add as much technology as you need to achieve it within the very large budgets that are allocated for these things. But when it comes to something very, very simple, it's actually much harder to achieve the end result with a simple design than it is with a complex one.
And funny enough, many people think there was a golden age of American engineering, but that it has passed us by because we don't have new Hoover Dams, Brooklyn Bridges, Panama Canals. Do you think that's the case and that the public perception of engineers as dry and boring has something to do with it?
No, I think what's really happened is that engineering has gone, if you want to say, underground. It's gone behind the scenes. We are doing just as much engineering now, I think, in this country as we always have been, but we're not building large visible structures anymore. We're building things like the iPhone, for example, where there's a tremendous amount of technology and engineering going into a product like that, but it's hidden beneath the surface on a very attractive skin, and so we're just not able to see it so clearly.
And we should still be amazed, speaking of going underground, that the sewage systems in major cities work. We never give them a thought, but imagine if they didn't.
Yeah, that's a great example. Now you bring that up, I have to sort of recall the example of the steam pipe, of course, in New York that blew up recently. So there's a catastrophic event which occurred from a piece of technology that's buried underground, sort of out of sight, out of mind, I think. And when we do those things, we bury them because they're not attractive to look at. But at the same time, it makes us very difficult to actually inspect and do maintenance on those kind of things. And so eventually, they will decay and corrode and fail.
All right. Andrew Burrows is the author of this really cool little black book called Everyday Engineering, Well Designed. And after I keep it for a while, I'll tell you if it was also well engineered. And again, you can go to WNYC.org, click on our scrapbook for photos of everyday engineering, and right on our show page, you'll also see a video about this book. By the way, a number of people have called in pertaining to our previous segment to say that the helmet law for bicycles in New York only pertains to people under 14 and delivery people. So we stand corrected. And Andrew, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.